We were talking about, Kim, we were talking about the concept of applying design thinking to the death and dying industry. And you said, well, yeah, design thinking has been involved in creative industry for a long time. How in the world do you, why, or how, first of all, how do you get physicians and scientists and people who are engineers and data people to think in those terms? And secondly, why is that necessary?
Yeah, when you think of healthcare, when you think of the system that we're working in, it's not benefiting anyone, especially those physicians who are working in the system. They signed up to do this because they wanted to help this word people. They wanted to help people. And my thing is, how do we get back to people? And with storytelling, whether it's a movie or a television series, or it's about a story. And every patient or everyone with a chronic illness comes with a story. And so I believe if we can empower this creativeness of how do we paint the patient's story, make them more than just a disease that we're treating, but a human being that has lived a full life to measure what is quality for them. It might be, a 7 on the pain scale, but fishing is a big part of their lives and that's what they want to do. And as long as they're going to do this treatment, they want to still fish. And so is this treatment going to let them do that? Yes or no? So it's how do we take off our titles and the white coats, and not just physicians, nurses and social workers, and look at human beings for who they are, a long life prior to this disease, and really look at asking the right questions. And this is why I love palliative care, because palliative care comes in, ask a question, and they shut up. They say, "What do you know about your diagnosis?" And the majority of the time, I'm sure those palliative care physicians hear not much. And that's where palliative care is so essential. And I really encourage people who their mother or themselves, if you were diagnosed with a chronic or a serious illness, not even a terminal illness, get palliative care involved, because they could be the bridge that gaps so many other things that are being thrown at this individual and can make sense of the puzzle. There's a lot of things in the healthcare industry. We're so good at med speak. Do you know physicians, they learn 60,000 new words in medical school? That's a whole entire language. So if granny comes in and the doctor is speaking Italian to granny about her sickness, she is not understanding. So literacy, how we talk about and use med speak, instead of just look, this is not well, this is not good. How do we go back at the end of life with serious illness and stop with the med speak and just be human beings taking care of someone that just wants to stay in their home and have quality? And our job is to do that, whether you're a physician or a social worker, is what are their goals and how can we meet them? Not all are medical.
How's it going so far?
I will have to say, there's been some amazing palliative care teams that I've seen across the 32 states in this 49 tour that I'm on that are just amazing. Amazing. And then you have people that don't want to change. And I believe that if I can empower the individual, the baby boomers, this silver tsunami that we're talking about, who's going to flood our system, and this is how do we get them to direct their end of life, just as they directed the healthcare industry at the birthing movement. They wanted to have babies and bring life in a different way. They demanded it. The healthcare system conformed. I think they have another opportunity to change healthcare.
What's your biggest frustration in this?
I think my biggest frustration is Washington, D.C. I feel like that a lot of things need to happen there, and how we practice at end of life, how we're reimbursed at end of life. I don't want to make end of life about a reimbursement. I want to make it about human beings. And sometimes we Americans, we monetize everything. And I feel that we have an essential and responsibility Because the most vulnerable, or one of the most vulnerable populations, is those who are seriously sick and are aging. We're living longer, thank God, because of medical advances, which is great. But we are going to be overwhelmed by these baby boomers, and there's so much compassion fatigue within the healthcare system that are we going to have people who are going to be working when I need them? And I think compassion fatigue is an epidemic within the healthcare industry right now. And we need to start taking better care of those who are taking care of people in the hospital, as well as palliative and hospice people at the end of life. Or we're not going to have anyone that wants to do this.
What popped through my mind, into my mind when you said that is, well, get your name on the list, because there's all sorts of folks that need that sort that attention, not just the caregivers.
Yeah, you know, it's about how do we make a difference in how we practice. I think the hospice benefit was a great start, but I think it's underfunded in so much regulations, and I want an end of life benefit. I want choices. I want people to be able to select what they want at the end of life, because that is the most moment when you are facing an imminent death. And I'm talking the last 2 years of life. You know, it's not a day or two. How can we plan the last two years of our life around what really matters? And I'm telling you, after 17 years in hospice care, it's not money, it's not titles, it's relationships. And how do we live our life around relationships far before we're diagnosed with a serious illness? And that's what the dying has taught me.
I saw something tonight when you were discussing, and it wasn't confrontational, but you were pushing back a little bit on the idea that the healthcare facilities are really interested in the people and not in the fees. That there's obviously is a little bit of a sore point for you.
Well, you know, I think anybody who's running a hospital feels like they're doing a good job. And I say they are within the system. I feel as a consumer that has lived 17 years in the industry, I have seen so many horrible, horrible things, over-treatment at end of life, no one knowing that the family is not dying. We in the healthcare industry need to be better at telling the truth and educating our individuals that we serve so that they can make the right decisions for themselves. We need to stop projecting the death we think they need or want and start listening. What really matters to them, and how do we design their life and end of life, whether it's a year or 6 months, around that? And so, no, I think everyone is doing the best they can within a system that is totally broken, totally profit-centered. And how do we bring that back to people? Not only people, but people who are actually taking care of those who are dying, because that's where the compassion fatigue is. And I've seen it. And I've seen it in every state that I have been in. People think they're doing a good job. But I can tell you, I can walk in any hospital within 20 miles of where we're sitting today and ask the CNA in that hospital if she feels like she's worthy. Does she feel like she has a voice within this healthcare system? And I would love to hear what she has to say.
There are so many aspects to this, and I was trying to think of how to ask the question of what's the one thing that will do the most good, and we can discuss that if you think it's worthwhile. But I think maybe a better question might be, what keeps you up at night about this?
I have to say, I don't think I'm a selfish person, but when it comes to what keeps me up, I am very selfish. I'm thinking about my own end of life. I want a seasoned palliative care, hospice, death doula within the last 2 years of my life, really shepherding me through this and allowing me to see the signs of a disease or a chronic illness changing so I can make the decisions. Do I want to go to Italy now? Or can I do this in 6 months? I want to have people who are well rested and who are taken care of at my bedside, not exhausted employees, overworked, underpaid, And I really want to fight for the individual who is working with these dying patients. I think the only that's so important to me because I feel like as the VP of communications at a local nonprofit, I was part of a senior leadership team that we left the staff behind. And I told myself when I left hospice, I'm going to do everything in my power to change that, that we cannot leave those working in this healthcare system, palliative care system, or hospice system behind. We have got to start taking care of those, taking care of the dying, or we're not going to have anyone to take care of us when we're at our end of life. And that is really, really important to me.
Is there when you're when you have a big challenge, when you have a big presentation to make, or when the stakes are really high for this cause that you've taken on, is there a single person that comes into your mind that you think of this, I'm doing it for them?
Yeah, I lost Rob Apple 19 years ago. He was 30 years old to melanoma, the first love of my life. And I think you carry individuals with you on this journey. I mean, you can't love without grieving, and the price of love is heavy. And a lot of people think of death and end of life as old age and elderly in their bed. I'm telling you that there are many young individuals facing a chronic and serious illness, and they are not, they are so shocked and so bewildered. But I'm fortunate because Rob had his family and had hospice and palliative care involved, and it's a way for me to really keep him alive. I don't think people actually die unless we stop talking about them. And who would have thought the girlfriend from so long ago would be part of the boy's legacy still today and teaching people about what he did for her as he saved her in every way, because he didn't tell me that he had cancer. I found out 4 years after he died. And that's a story in my book called Bridging the Gaps, Life Lessons of the Dying. And so that story is very personal, and he was doing it out of love. But I'm still the girl that did not know the truth. And how do we change that? How do we bring something that sometimes is hard out of the closet? Because all I know is when you have hard conversations with people you love and you work through situations, they become so much more richer. Only the rich relationships you have had gone through a lot, arguments and everything, and you're still here standing next to each other. And it's about that. Because our grandparents, I mean, they stayed married for 50 to 60 years. Do you think it was all fun? No, but they committed. And sometimes I feel my generation, we give up on people too easily, whether it's in marriage or friendship, or people are human beings, especially physicians and people practicing in the medical community. And we have to have compassion for each other, because it's really, when it comes down to it, what matters most is connection and relationships. That's all you can take with you, is what have you done? So yeah, this tour is really in honor of Rob, a person that unfortunately was taken away 19 years ago from melanoma. And get this entire nation will know his name. And so he's still living. And I think the stories are so powerful. And I'm really honored to have him along on this trip, even though he's with me, spiritually and not physically. I would give anything for him not to have died of cancer, but shit happens, life happens. He wanted to die his way, and he was honored that way. And it's about how do we allow everyone to have the death they choose, not something that we project on them.
And that's important to you.
Yeah, it is. I think truth is important. Like, tell me what this treatment's going to do to me. What are the outcomes? How can we be transparent, whether it's in Washington or right here in the ICU in a local hospital? Truth, even though it's hard, it empowers people to know what's the next decision. And I think sometimes we feel like we can cure death and no one's going to get out of here alive. And I tell you, I really I want to live life well, I want to die well, because I think that if I live life well, I have a more opportunity of possibly dying well. And what that means for the people that I leave behind is that maybe their grief will not be so hard. I want to do it well. I want to look over my shoulder and be like, man, that was a great adventure. Everything was said. Everything was done. And now I'm ready for the next one. It's finished.
Last question, I promise. You're a storyteller, so you understand this. There's an exercise that we do where we describe the whole story in three words. What three words describes your story?
I would have to say, what three words? Do they have to be consecutive words or just three words?
Anything.
I know. <I'm> not... I would say, creativity and really educating people through storytelling. I know that's not three words, but storytelling equals connection. And that's as little of three words that I could possibly get. But I really feel that live well means die well. And how do we talk about death so people live more boldly? So I think my three words, if I had to choose them, is live boldly and with intentions, for sure.